Welcome to No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. We promise to inspire, challenge, and make you think beyond the ordinary, reaching for a life lived for love alone. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and tell your friends to join us every Saturday night at 5:30 and Sunday morning at 9:30 Central Standard Time. And now, here's my husband, Bishop Randy Dean.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to you. I'm Bishop Randy Dean, and I am the No BS Bishop. I'm alive to love. All lesser values than love easily slide into BS, which is bait and switch, or other things you might reckon it to be. I am here to see to it that my life, first of all, is a life of love. Not about baiting and switching or BSing people. My life, I long for my life to be about love. And so, today's recording is my fifth anniversary of this radio program. Yep, 5 beautiful years of unpacking the purposes, the power, the principles of love, so that those of you who listen are learning something about love you may have never dreamed you would know. And it's really been my honor, my pleasure, my joy to be with you every week on this program. So much to say in 5 years, and so much more to say going forward. So what we do here on the No BS Bishop, we start off with a couple of things as a regular routine. We end with a couple of things as a means of keeping our feet on the ground and the car between the white lines, as they say, keeping me in my lane. So we start with something I call Love's Creed. It is a creed that I wrote. So it's nothing as important as the Apostles' Creed or Nicene Creed, but it is important to me because from these words, I've learned to live a life of love based on these principles. So, after the Lord's Creed, Love's Creed, we'll say the Lord's Prayer. You know, I've done that now 3 or 4 times, the Lord's Creed and Love's Prayer. Maybe I should learn how to make that a part of my on-purpose mistake. Anyway, Love's Creed starts it, and then we go to the Lord's Prayer, because the Lord's Prayer is a grounding, a foundation upon which any of us can stand. So, I'll carry you there in just a moment. But first, here is Love's Creed. I'm going to read it in total, then I'll come back and I'll ask you to repeat after me. All right? Here it is in total. I'm alive to love. I am not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs, locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less than love. I wrote that many years ago as a New Year's resolution, edited it over the years, and then finally started calling it Love's Creed. Thought at first it'd be for me and maybe a few other folks, but now it's been here with me for 5 years on this broadcast. All right, let me give it to you in short bursts, and you repeat after me. Here we go. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs, locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less than love. There you have it. Now, if you'd like a copy of that, you could write me at my email, randydeanministries@gmail.com. That's randydeanministries, all one word, all lowercase, @gmail. Send me your request. I'll be happy to send you a copy of it. You could put it in your computer, write it on a 5x7 card, or type it up into your phone, wherever you can put it so that it's readily accessible for you. I would encourage you to give it a shot and make it a daily thing for yourself. Speaking of something that you could do every day, the Lord's Prayer. I don't know that a day goes by but what I say the Lord's Prayer. I may, on a rare occasion, miss a day. But most days, if not all, I am reciting the Lord's Prayer. Not as some vain repetition, because Jesus warned us not to do that. But I repeat it for my soul's sake, for my mind's settledness, for the serenity of my path. And it keeps my feet walking in the filter of the beauty of the Lord's Prayer. Now, if you don't know the Lord's Prayer, that's fine. Maybe you want to write yourself a copy of it for yourself, or maybe not. Maybe you just want to follow me on it, or where you go to church. But in either case, let me lead you in the Lord's Prayer and invite you to the principles that are found therein. They're powerful. Imagine, this is a prayer that's been prayed for 2,000 years by millions of people, and the prayer originated in the words and in the heart and in the life of Jesus Christ. If you want your prayers to be effective, may they all be based in something like the Lord's Prayer. Here we go. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. I just must tell you that as I say the Lord's Prayer, I can feel my mind just wrapping around it in a good way. My thought process, even in the moments I'm speaking it, my thought processes slow down and engage those truths. That's the beauty of it. That's the thing that could become a daily enrichment and foundation for you as well. Well, today, on my fifth anniversary of making this broadcast, Alive to Love, I want to remind you of a couple of things that have set me in motion. And that is, I am never, ever going to pretend that I'm the PhD doctor of love, that I know it all, that I've got it all down, and I never make mistakes. I would propose that anybody that would suggest they know any topic that well is probably not telling the truth. They're BSing. I'm not going to BS you. I know at 71, I've still got a lot to learn about love. Love is not a sprint. Love is not a walk around the block. Love is a marathon. It's something we run and we run and we run. It is also, as I said, not a walk around the block, but it is that thing that we do to climb a mountain. If you're going to climb a mountain, you got to know what it is you're doing, especially one of those tall mountains that takes you into the thin air of the upper atmosphere. You cannot afford to be foolish about it. I'm here to tell you, love is just like that. We cannot afford to be foolish in our approach to love. To that end, I know people say to me regularly, all through my life, whenever I've preached a sermon on love or a series on love, even here, people hear me, they say, well, you talk big about love, but there was that time you didn't love me. I used to get my hackles up. I used to get all offended and worry about, oh, what's wrong with them? But then I realized, no, don't push back. Don't get your hackles up, whatever a hackle is. I don't get it up. I don't even have a hackle as far as I know. I've just decided that if somebody were to accuse me of not loving them the way I could or should, I'm going to say, I'm sorry. I am a human being who's on a journey just like you. And that journey to love has had my highs, I've had my lows, but I promise you, I'm not going to give up. So I've learned to accept that. It may very well be very true, and if it's not true, well, I'm still not going to give somebody reason to doubt me or argue with me about this all-important human challenge of love. I wrote something here not long ago that captures what I feel about it. Here it is. All we really need, especially in America today, is a revolution of love. A tenacious, exuberant grasping for love. Laying down every sort of politics and foolish determination to be right at the expense of all others. To invest our intellect, our passions, and our research into what love is, what love does, what love speaks, what love plans, what love's purposes are, and that for which love will lay down its life. Love is the only way up, and love is the only way out. Not only love hoped for, now hear this carefully, but love done. Those who dwell in love dwell in God, and those who dwell in God dwell in love. The emphasis here in this quote that I wrote is not just love hoped for, though we should hope for it, but love done. It's in the doing of love that we manifest a significant lifestyle. It's in the doing of love. Of course, and I wouldn't argue about not talking about love. Well, I wouldn't have a radio broadcast. We got to talk about it. We got to learn. We've got to educate ourselves. But in the end of that education, day by day, there needs to be a doing of the love. The little book of James says a lot about, you know, if you got faith, great. But I'll tell you this, show me your faith by what you do. Faith without works, James says, is dead. Hear that. It's just not hampered. It's not ill. It's not weak. No, faith without works is dead. You could take the word faith out and say love. Love without works is dead. In fact, Paul in the little chapter of 1 Corinthians 13, some of you know it well because you had to recite it at your wedding ceremony or you've heard it in a church service. Love is, and he lists all these things, and he says, I could give my body to be burned. I could sell all my clothes and my food and everything I own and give it to the poor. And if I do not have love, it is nothing. So to that end, my goal here is to teach and train and impress and attract you. That's one of the highest goals I have here, is to attract you into the life of love, to recognize that love done is what love becomes in terms of our lifestyle. Now, when people say to me, you didn't love me as I was hoping you would, I have to sort out with myself going forward from that. Like I said a few moments ago, I will apologize and I will own that it's likely I made a mistake and I didn't love as well as I could. But I have to go back and in examining myself, taking my own personal inventory, was I guilty of failing to love? Or is this a person who's used to having somebody who is codependent in their life? Now here's a subject for you. Love is altogether important and valuable in the human existence, in the human journey. But a lot of people mistake codependency for love. Here's what codependency is. Codependency comes along and says, ooh, I have to fix somebody. I've got to manage them. I got to control them. I need to recruit or enlist or convert them. I need to make sure that they're enrolled in my ideas or they're enticed, they're examined by me, that they get my advice. I've got to use them to some degree to help them to become. No, that's codependency. A friend of mine used to say that you know you're codependent when you're about to die and somebody else's life flashes before your eyes, which is to say you haven't been living your own life. You've been trying to fix, manage, control, enroll, convert, or entice other people into a better life rather than living your own life for love. Codependency is that kind of and it really is a sickness. It's a mental illness that encases us in somebody else's needs rather than seeing to it that our own needs are met well enough to become strong so that we can love other people rather than being codependent toward other people. Making my life available, so available to others without any real self-structure for my life to be better, well, that gets into a mental health issue that is called codependency. And I look at my life as having been affected by the disease of codependency. You see, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an addict. And yet I grew up in a home where my older brother, which was my only sibling, was being dragged through the dredges and the pains of his own addiction. And I grew up seeing him in a terrible wreck of a life all through his life, up to and including his own death, which was death by suicide due to his his dependency on drugs and alcohol. And his life ended in that catastrophe. He was just about 70 years of age at the time. My point in telling you that is, having grown up in that atmosphere, having watched my mother and father with no tools to manage manage his addictions or his mental health, they became codependents, and they expected me to be codependent in terms of doing for my brother what he wouldn't do for himself. Managing his life when he was out of control and not managing his own life. In fact, my mother on her deathbed said to me, "You've got to love your brother," meaning I had to do something to help him through his dependency. And my mother was passing away at the time, and it was not the time to argue anything. And I said, "I do love him, Mom, I promise you." But what I meant by that and what I mean now is my love is not codependency. My love is not going to be about living his life for him or living his needs in a way that I'm going to try to get him into treatment without his full expressed permission and desire to be in treatment. Now, that's an extreme, but it's yet my story, and it's why I remain involved with a 12-step group with AA. I remain involved to say, "Hi, I'm Randy. I'm a codependent. I don't get off on Jack Daniels. I get off on jacked-up people trying to fix, manage, control, enroll, entice, and convert them. That's my disease, and I would challenge you to consider, are you loving? Or are you codependent? Are you loving someone, and which is normal to help them with whatever they may request you to do? Normal life in a husband-wife relationship or two people living together as significant others? Well, of course, we're going to wash dishes and empty the dishwasher. Of course, we're going to mow the yard. We're going to share chores with each other. So that's not codependency. That's love. That's love done, is sharing our responsibilities. However, codependency jumps in there and says, "Here, let me do everything for you because I don't want you to feel unattended to or neglected by me." No, that's not love. That's codependency. It's having a conversation with somebody. And again, as I'm saying this, I think about the love that my wife and I have enjoyed for 50 years. We've had our moments with codependency, and we still occasionally do. But my wife and I have learned to love each other and to share our responsibilities in the home. For instance, small example, she loads the dishwasher because that's her desire, and she does it well, and I don't do it well. And then when the dishwasher's been run, I empty the dishwasher. Now, occasionally, when she's not around, I fill the dishwasher and empty it. And occasionally, when I'm not around, she'll fill the dishwasher and she'll empty it. But by and large, it's a shared responsibility. I don't see that as anything but how love gets done. It's my way of saying, "Ginger, I love you. You don't have to fill it and empty it in the dishwashing chore of life. It's a shared responsibility." And I could go on about other chores. My point is this. It's an illustration to say to you, love is something we do with friends, with neighbors, and even with enemies, to share responsibilities, to share ideas, to give and take from one another in an equilibrium that is somewhat like the political life. The word politics is really based on the idea of compromise, not the compromise of my values, but the compromise of what we do together. I'm not going to get everything I want. You're not going to get everything you want, but together we're going to get as much of what we both need together. And that's going to take some intellectual compromise on what we want and what we expect. That's how love works. And that's why I say in America today, in our nation, all we need is a revolution of love. A tenacious, exuberant grasping for love. Laying down our swords, our verbal swords of foolish determination to be right all the time. The sword of politics. I'm right. You're wrong. Shut up. Sit down. Do it my way. You see, that's not love. That's hatred, really. It's because I'm doing something at the expense of your life rather than with the investment together. To learn in a revolution of love that we can invest our intellect, our passions, and our research into what love is, what love speaks, what love plans, what love proposes, and especially what love does. And that for which love will occasionally lay down its life in sacrifice. You see, love is the only way up in life. It's the only way out through life. Not only love hoped for, but love done. The little epistle of 1 John says, those who dwell in love dwell in God. Those who dwell in God dwell in love. So to that end, we are here every week. I hope I can be here another 5 years. And in 5 years from now, I hope, I pray, I'm reaching for making sure that I can give you even more of this study, this pilgrimage, this research, this mountain climb, this marathon of love. That Jesus said of love that it would be the one thing that would fulfill all the law and all the prophets. Jesus said of love it would be the one thing by which all his people would be known as his disciples. You can do a lot of other things, and that's all fine and good, but if we do not do love, then it is for nothing. So here I am, no BS Bishop. I'm alive to love. I believe in the power of love to fuel humanity. I believe in the power of love to fuel our relationships. I believe in the power of love to fuel national interactions and politics. I believe in the power of love to be the communication that we are all desiring to have with one another and our neighbors. Love your neighbor as yourself. So that means have a good, healthy self-love, where you know in yourself you're caring for yourself, and you're not being codependent and setting aside your own needs to do everything for somebody else. To be a loving soul is to love yourself. Now, to that end, I want to invite you to do a couple of things as a practice of loving yourself. First of all, I want you to breathe well. I want you to breathe. In a moment, I'm going to count to three, and I want you to take the deepest breath you can. Hold it down in your belly, down against your diaphragm. Slow yourself down and give yourself the chance just to lower the temperature, mentally speaking, by good breaths. One, two, three. Inhale. Hold it there. Nice and easy. And exhale. That simple practice, breathing, lowers our blood pressure, calms our mind, gives our body a moment to just recoup and refresh itself, and gives your emotions the chance to be settled. Because out of emotions, good and healthy love can flow. Speaking of good and healthy love, I want to challenge you to an exercise of looking somebody in the eye And yeah, I know it's awkward, but look somebody in the eye and say the most magical, holy, and charmed words in the human language. And those three words are, I love you. You'll rattle somebody's cage when you say it, especially if it's somebody new to you or maybe a complete stranger. I love you. Some folks have not heard those three magical words. They haven't heard it in weeks, months, maybe years. And that is so tragic. Every human alive should hear those three words every so often, if not every day. Someone, somewhere says, I love you. You just never know whose day you're going to make. And yes, it's hard. We all have some intimacy issues when it comes to this, but I want you to be challenged to push past those intimacy frailties and be connected to other human beings. Not just love hoped for, but love done. You see, the biggest mistake we make is thinking we've all got time. Here's what I want to challenge you to do. Be present. Be kind. Love more. Love now. You see, Mother Teresa said once, go into all the world today and love the people you meet. Let your presence light new light in the hearts of others. Oh my, I love that quote. It tastes like a juicy, good steak to me. Go into the world today and love the people you meet. Let your presence light new light in the hearts of others. Now here's Randy Dean telling you, I want you to rise and shine and do something beautiful, because, oh baby, the misery of ugly has been done to death. Today is 9/11. We're looking at 23 years ago, my goodness, when America was attacked on its own soil and thousands of people lost their lives. And why did they lose their lives? They lost their lives because they simply were going to their jobs. They were simply arriving in an office in the World Trade Towers. Or they were at the Pentagon. Or they were saving America by grabbing the terrorists in a plane and crashing that plane. Or the firefighters, or the first responders who rushed into disaster to help someone. You know what? We saw a magnificent illustration of the power of love.